Welcome to the Columbus Metro Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. The forum cultivates the conversations that drive Columbus forward. Every Wednesday at a networking luncheon in downtown Columbus, the forum brings together visionary leaders to examine issues that matter. We'd love to have you join us in person. Tickets and information about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. When it comes to music, who says Columbus can't be the next Nashville or Austin? The city already generates over $1.3 billion in economic impact from a great music scene, but some say it lacks parts of the industry infrastructure, like major record labels, mid-sized venues, and a dedicated entertainment district that defines top-tier music cities. With artists, insiders, and civic leaders, this week we're stage diving into how Columbus can turn its thriving music ecosystem up to 11. This week's panelists are Bruce Garfield, Executive Director of Music Means Business, Amy Hollihan, Deputy Director of Music Columbus, Natalie Jackson, co-founder of Natalie's Grandview, and Rashad Thomas, CEO of Elevator Music. Our host is Chris DeVille, Managing Editor of Stereo Gum and author of Such Great Heights, The Complete Cultural History of the Indie Rock Explosion. Let's join this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Amped Up, Columbus Wants Its Music Moment.
Take it away.
All right, thanks, Tom, and thanks to all of you. So, yeah, my name is Chris DeVille. A lot of you might know me from my time spent as a writer for Columbus Alive. I worked there from 2006 to 2013, and during that time, one of my main focuses was writing about the local music scene, I learned just how broad and vibrant the local music community is. There are so many different kinds of music kind of percolating within Columbus, and a lot of them are intersecting with each other in really cool ways. And yet, we know that even if a city has a exciting creative community, there's a whole other dimension to kind of supporting that on like a business level, on an institutional level, on an infrastructure kind of level. And so we want to talk about that today. We want to talk about, you know, how to kind of elevate, you know, to take a word from Rashad, how to elevate the city's music community to the next level, so to speak. So I guess I just wanted to start by asking you all, like, when we talk about how to support local artists and how to, you know, make Columbus a city that is able to launch artists more consistently, what comes to mind as like the first thing that you would bring up with people in terms of like what we could stand to grow in and develop?
I guess I'll take the first answer. Since I'm an artist, I think Columbus has a unique vantage point. I don't hear this talked about a lot, but you think about Delta Blues in Mississippi, right? You think about cultures and different music that parts of the country have been behind. Ohio, we've actually invented a style of music in the 70s. Anybody know what style of music we invented? Funk music, yeah. It's a big deal, and it's kind of permeated. You can't turn on the radio right now without hearing funk music in the birth child at being in Columbus, Ohio. Dayton, Ohio. Cincinnati, Ohio. These are places that actually, when I was a kid, I didn't know all the history that we had, but to know those things, I think helps a young artist when they're growing up and they have something to reach for. And it's also, every community cultivates that local sound too and helps it. The radios are behind it. The venues are behind it. So I just wanted to bring that up in terms of our history. We have a history that we can actually say we created something. So we're just as important as these big cities, and we deserve our moment. So I just wanted to put that out there.
What else jumps to mind when you're thinking, you know, if the first thing that you think about when you think about like how to develop Columbus's music infrastructure to benefit artists?
I want to say that I'm holding it right. That I think the work that Music Columbus has done, and I spent 7 years there, is laying the groundwork from the ground up for young artists, whether it's education or opportunity. The gaping hole in the ecosystem, and for me as a music business professional, from the day before I arrived here, it was really noticeable that there's no music business infrastructure as such. We have recording studios, we have tons of artists, we have wonderful venues, we have a populace that enjoys music, but not to demean any of the, you know, embryonic record labels, we don't have a record label of significance. We don't have a major manager here that's active today. We don't have publishing companies. And the reason that so many artists have left the state physically, or even if they live here, their entire economic income stream benefits another state and city is because we don't have those elements of an industry to offer. So I kind of guess that's, what can we do? I think we need to recognize that anything we're going to discuss starts with two elements, the artists and the venues. Because artists want to have a place to play that's in their DNA, and venues want to give them the opportunity to display their art and then draw fans.
Yeah, go ahead.
Building on that, I think, yes, there's industry that exists in, say, Nashville that doesn't exist here. However, the industry is completely different than 40 years ago. It is a global network, and through COVID, so much happened from afar on Zoom. We have people collaborating, musicians collaborating here with people in LA and New York, and that is something that we can capitalize on, and it's a relational thing that we can help our artists access and give them the opportunity to do that artist development here so that when they're ready, we can make those connections for them to jump right in. It doesn't mean that necessarily we have to have a big record label come here and set up shop. I think that the way that the music industry is evolving, there's so much opportunity to get that access and opportunity without trying to convince someone to invest that type of infrastructure here in a traditional way from 40 years ago.
I think funding is a big one that we're probably going to hear a lot about today. But I think it's also, not only is it funding, but it's how do we value the arts more? How do we make it, how do we convince government or local officials to view arts as essential part of our lives, because it is, you know, artists show up on people's best days, they show up on your worst days. You expect art and music for almost every event or celebration in your entire life, yet we don't view the people doing that as an essential part of the makeup of an economy.
When I think of big cities like New Orleans or Austin, where there's a music culture behind it, the word celebration comes to mind. They celebrate their artists. They celebrate their specific culture, what makes them special. I think Columbus has an identity problem in terms of what makes us us. That's kind of why I led with funk music, because it's a storyline. It's something that you can lead and lean into. And celebration means support from radio, support from venues, support from local. I think we need to be put on a pedestal in terms of our local musicians and how great they are. I think it's important.
So there's an aspect that you're getting at related to kind of figuring out, like, what it, sort of defining what Columbus does have to offer so that it can be amplified.
What makes it unique, exactly.
Yeah, because I know there's always a lot of talk about, like, being the next Austin, the next Nashville, the next Atlanta. And it seems like, to me, that just trying to copy-paste wouldn't really work, because those places had a unique situation that they were cultivating. So then there's a question of, like, what is our identity, like you're bringing up?
Yeah, regional sounds. I think sounds have certain regions have sounds. Columbus and Ohio has had sounds before. The problem is that we don't rally behind it. We don't rally behind our heroes and put them on pedestals. That's why people, Bruce says, they move away, because they don't feel the sense of community in Columbus. And believe it or not, we have a lot of professionals, big music professionals living right next door to you. We're not celebrating them. So
I agree with that. Just one thing that I feel like I'm, like, bragging to people about all of the time, but I think sometimes I get a confused look, is like Dr. John came to Columbus, Ohio for his entire rhythm section, and Bobby Floyd, Reggie Jackson, and Dwight Bailey. And you can hear them at multiple venues all over the city, but there should be a line out the door, and there's not.
I think it's important to realize that the, quote, music cities that you mentioned all started with a genre-specific kind of music. whether it was country and bluegrass out of Nashville, or Texas swing and the outlaw country movement when Willie Nelson moved back to Austin, or Memphis with blues and gospel music. Someone once asked me when I first got here and joined Music Columbus, well, what kind of music are we going to be known for? It didn't take me any much time to say, good music. Good music. A center where we have and celebrate all kinds of music, because you can never replicate those cities. I mean, they're 100 years ahead of us, or 75 years ahead of us.
So you mentioned record label kind of, you talked about Memphis, obviously, like you have Sun Records, you have all these, there are certain cities have kind of this historic, certainly Detroit, Motown, you think about. So like, what does it take to, build up that kind of institution in a city?
I've learned that we had those labels. We've had several. It took me to be well into my 30s to know about, we all know about musical, but to know about the labels, the funk labels and the R&B labels and the soul labels and the rock labels that were created here and that just didn't get the backing that they deserved. So we did have a head start. We just didn't do what we needed to do with it. You know, like I said, to create an art form that the West Coast is known for. California's known for funk music. They didn't create it. Like, anytime you hear a rap song from the West Coast, it's taking our formula. So it's just, we have an infrastructure. We just have the support. Like I said, we have the support. And nowadays, there's no sound because it's too late. The Midwest is the amalgamation of a lot of sounds. But we're also known for being the best musicians. The Midwest is known for having the best musicians. So I don't know. That's a tough question.
Yeah, and our musicians, we have to start thinking about them as entrepreneurs when we talk about this value proposition, and recognize them for the small business entrepreneurship that they bring to the table. And a lot of musicians, yes, they're creating music, and then they do go on to start a recording studio, a venue, their own management. So I think that we have that organically happening here. There's just a conversation that needs to be had about how we invest in that better. I mean, we have $1.3 billion in our industry, but we know that we can double that based on our conversations with the economists that we worked with for this report. And how do we invest in a smart and strategic way so that we're really building it from the ground up and we're getting more money into the pockets of those musicians who are the entrepreneurs doing this work?
So when we talk about we investing, like who do you envision the investment coming from? Is that like from the business community? Is that like a government, investment? Like what do you imagine?
I think across the board, we need strategic partnerships and investments that can come from the city, from businesses, from, I do think it's going to be a mix of public-private investment, that we need to recognize that every dollar you put into the music industry, $1.40 is produced for our economy. And how do we capitalize on that knowledge and use that to, again, get more money into the music, into musicians' pockets?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I guess part of, there seems to be this underlying current of like kind of respecting what is there, celebrating what is there, kind of broadcasting also to the world what is there. I know Bruce was talking about the need for more infrastructure to put that out there in the world. I also think about like media as well. I mean, on a local media level, it's dwindling all the time, and that's not unique to Columbus. That's something that's happening all over the country. I used to work for a weekly newspaper, and we had 2, 3, 4 of them at the time, and it's like I don't think we have any now. The closest equivalent is Andy Downing running one website, one guy running a website. So there's a local media level, but then there's also, I think about like, when we talk about these historic music cities, they have like Austin City Limits, a TV series broadcasting that image out to the world. You have the Grand Ole Opry Radio Hour for 100 years. It just turned 100. That at the time when radio was like the main medium. So I guess this is like kind of a broad-based question, but what do you see as and this is a question close to my heart as a media person, what do you see as sort of the future of media's involvement in cultivating local music?
Yeah, media controls the narrative. It always has. I think as Columbus, as a Midwest town, those big cities, we had, like, even Hot 97 in New York City, having the Funk Master Flex play a local song, is technically local, but when he plays it, it's you know, it's a worldwide song. So I think program directors and everybody in higher ups in Columbus, Ohio, they have a responsibility. They always have had a responsibility. When I got a major, my major record deal in 2003, I got songs, my song played on the radio 24/7, but I knew there was money behind it also. I knew my record label paid to have my song played, but how much is just being done for strictly off the love and the respect of the artist? I don't know. It's a very corporate situation at the radio and at most of these structures, so I don't know how we solve that. I don't know.
Well, let's start right here by saying we have a PBS program that's aired on 400 stations around the country that's basically scratching around to find financing. I'm talking about Songs at the Center. I think Eric Nez is here today who founded it. If he had financing, instead of bringing on an artist that's, you know, a writer that's had, let's say, had their day, or the songs aren't relatable by the audience, but could afford to bring in a Dave Matthews, writers of substance, not to demean any writers that came before that, we have 400 stations that are viewing this. And if we revitalized it. We also lost a great program in 2018 when Promo West had Live from Promo West, and that came off the air because Scott Steiner couldn't find one company, one organization in this city to sponsor it. And that was broadcast in Pennsylvania and all over Ohio with the potential to go nationally. Mm-hmm. So we have to look at what do we have now.
So I also think about now, don't we think that the equivalent to that stuff that would actually like kind of send Columbus out to the world would probably be like, you know, a TikTok series or a podcast, or it just seems like there's more heat behind those forms of media, right?
But when it does take off on TikTok, are the local corporations and radio, are they behind it? Do they know it? That's the trick, because there's stars. We got stars in this city right now that are huge. But do we know it? Are we supporting them? You know, and that's really the thing.
I guess I'm thinking about like franchises, like Hot Ones, but for music or whatever, like, you know.
You started, man.
We should talk about venues as well. I've heard, in the description of this event, there is an idea put forth that Columbus has really good small venues and large venues, but there's a gap in between. And I'd like to hear more about your thoughts on, like, when we talk about what size of venues are we talking about that we're missing, and what would be the value of having more of those?
I'd like to start by saying that there's no capacity venue between the 4,000 plus Kimball Live outdoor venue and the Schottenstein. So you're talking about a difference between 4,000 and 19,000. The hole I see in the marketplace is an outdoor amphitheater with a capacity of 10 to 12,000. Because there's a trend today in live music where venues are being built for music instead of shoving music into venues built for sports. If I say Las Vegas, most people will say, oh, the Sphere. If I say Red Rocks, people know it's Colorado. And the same with large festivals. So I see that, at least from my viewpoint, as the main hole in the marketplace. It will also attract artists that we're not getting, that would rather play outdoors during the summer or the spring and the fall, at a ticket price that would be able to give them the guarantees they demand without having to drape off 3,000-4,000 seats in an indoor arena. And I'm not putting down the Nationwide Arena or the Shot and Steam, because they get their fair share of shows. But there are artists that are kind of in that space that we're missing. And they would play here if we had that outdoor amphitheater.
Now, it's interesting you bring up the Sphere and Red Rocks, because those are like iconic venues. They really stand out. In terms of outdoor amphitheaters, you know, we had one, and it's IKEA now, but like, and part of the reason it's IKEA now is because someone decided that it was more valuable as IKEA than as a music venue. So is there something to be said about if we develop a large outdoor venue, it has to have some kind of distinctive quality to it to set it apart from kind of the interchangeable sheds around the country?
Yeah, and I think if we back it up a step, we have to focus on the audience building. I mean, we haven't recovered our venues from the pandemic across the board. And, you know, the National Independent Venue Alliance said only 20% of the music venues in Ohio were profitable last year. And that is problematic. So how do we address that so that the venue ladder that exists already can thrive and that all of our musicians have audiences that are coming out to support them? The demand is there so they can make more money, have a higher percentage of their living come from money. And then within that, the next step, because demand is elevated, is to think about what that venue can look like. And then that the fact that we have the audience momentum leads that to be successful. And then we can talk about policies that make it so that some of our venues that are rental spaces aren't getting pushed out when gentrification happens in those neighborhoods. Say, if we do a music district, how do we protect those venues so that they can stay when it gets really popular and all of a sudden the value of the land has increased? So how do we address that in a strategic way that we are thinking proactively rather than reacting to crises as they come along?
To go off of that, yeah, I guess it's hard to get excited or, you know, want to talk about the next thing when the things that do exist are already struggling. So to me, it's like we're already working within a broken system, clearly, if 80% of the venues in Ohio are not profitable, which I can definitely speak to that. We had our first break-even year, $768 in profit in 2024. So thank you. we even got tiles to represent this because it was that much of a celebration for our staff. But it's like, yeah, what's going to stop these? I absolutely agree there's a gap that exists and one that needs filled, but what's going to stop those new, you know, bigger venues from facing the same stats that we're currently facing?
Do you have any ideas for, I mean, I'm sorry if this is already encompassed in some of your previous remarks, but like for how a venue like yours could be more supported?
Funding. yeah, I think it just goes to kind of what we've been saying. It's a undervalued industry and it needs to be taken just as seriously as other industries that are continuously getting government subsidies. We need to be, you know, valued in the same way, and the money is out there. It's just a matter of getting it and putting it to use. Some of the bills that Music Columbus was, you know, outreaching about and having people send emails to our, you know, state leaders, that would have been huge funding. It was a percentage of alcohol sales that could go to music programming. Could go to production costs. I mean, all of that would be huge. If we had a fund that would cover sound engineers and let us have a better deal to set forward to musicians. I think like Lisa Cave hit me to Ireland. They are doing $1,500 a month stipends to working musicians. That's taking, you know, that's really committing to your local arts people, organizations, like we value arts and this is, we're showing you how much we value arts.
Is there like an application process for that? How does that work?
I need to look more into it, but it seems like it was, you had to prove that you're a working artist and it was 2,000 people. Obviously they're a smaller, you know, area than we are, but you know, I think it's getting creative and we, you know, there's ways to achieve the things that we want to do. We just need to work together to accomplish that. And I mean, that's yet another thing, but I do think venues could work more together to do lobbying efforts instead of all of us individually trying to figure how to fill out the COVID loans, which was a full-time job. why, you know, have one person that represents the entire music scene that's applying for these kind of funds on behalf of all of us.
These are really interesting thoughts. Well, I've lost my train of thought here. I'm also wondering about, like, okay, so there was a subject of entertainment districts. You know, we kind of have those or have had those. I mean, certainly the Arena District includes the whole Promo West complex. What do we, when we talk about, you know, developing an entertainment district, what are we thinking about? What, where, and what kinds of venues, what sizes of venues, what kind of infrastructure does that involve?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of valuable lessons and opportunities in the idea of a music district, the opportunity to build audiences and create cohesive branding, collective branding, and shared resources. But as I mentioned before, there are known pitfalls that we need to preemptively discuss and prepare for in terms of how that can change a community and potentially make it harder for the people who are building it to stay there and thrive and continue to have their spaces and opportunities available to them. So I think we need to work hand in hand with the musicians who, as I said, are entrepreneurs and already creating these spaces, such as in the Old North, and I know Franklinton is starting to develop that as well. And how do we work with them to help them achieve their goals and build protections for them at policy levels that Music Columbus, as we evolve, can help further that leadership role in working with the city to make sure that we're protecting them and that they can continue to thrive as we bring in more audiences through some of those strategic thinking goals.
You are listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Columbus has talent, energy, and creativity, but what will it take to build a world-class music industry right here at home? This week's forum is digging into how business, arts, and community leaders are collaborating to make it happen. This week's panelists are Bruce Garfield with Music Means Business, Amy Holohan with Music Columbus, Natalie Jackson with Natalie's Grandview, and Rashad Thomas with Elevator Music. Our host is Chris DeVille, managing editor of Stereo Gum and author of Such Great Heights, The Complete Cultural History of the Indie Rock Explosion. We'll return to this week's CMC Forum, Amped Up, Columbus Wants Its Music Moment, after a short break.
Music can inspire and energize us every single morning. Hey, it's Mike Foley inviting you to join me weekdays from 6 to 8 on The Morning Mix. Yes, it's early, but the power of music and the passion I have for it will give you that extra spark to face the rest of the day. You'll hear artists you recognize, but even better, you'll discover new favorites. You'll have opportunities to win tickets and learn about upcoming shows. You'll meet and feel connected to some of our talented Central Ohio musicians, as they often join us in the studio to chat about their latest projects. The fun peaks on Fridays when we feature some of the latest vinyl releases and spin at least one song each hour right off the turntable. I love hearing your feedback too. So make my morning mix our morning mix by listening every weekday from 6 to 8 here on WCBE, where music connects us all.
My name is Jack.
I'm Case.
And I'm Nico.
And we are a go-go.
Weekdays from 8 a.m. to noon, WCBE's calm, cool, and collected stalwart, Mike Taylor, drills down to focus on the best current music from today's most relevant artists, with an emphasis on Grammy winners and nominees.
Things take a turn for the upbeat in the 11 a.m. hour, with a punchy playlist featuring rock, electric blues, and jazz, a little reggae, and more.
Antimeridium is also where you'll hear live performances and interviews with bands and artists performing in the legendary Studio A. Keep current and plugged in with AM.
Hi, I'm Maggie Brennan, the host of The Global Village, weekdays from noon to 4 p.m. I hope you'll join me for a blend of music from around the world and from our very own backyard and the insights to the artist who created it. It's also the place on WCBE's schedule where you'll find hundreds of up-close and personal performances and interviews live from Studio A. And every day you'll have a chance to win tickets to a variety of concerts and events. Tune in, won't you? That's The Global Village with me, Maggie Brennan, weekdays from noon to 4 p.m., only on 90.5 FM WCBE Columbus, where music matters.
This is Jim Maneri, host of PM or Post Meridium, keeping the music with you through the end of the workday and into the early evening from 7 to 8 p.m. A panoply of music picked mostly by a pronunciation miscreant with a predilection for music history and a love of popular music, punctuated modestly with factoids and stories about music and musicians garnered from decades working as one myself. Then from 7 to 8 p.m., I stay to host 40 by 83, the only all-local music show in the 614, the 740, and beyond. 40 by 83 is the longitude and latitude of Columbus, and we're here every weeknight sharing the best current music artists in Central Ohio, as well as celebrating the rich legacy of historically great music and musicians local to Central Ohio. Tune in at 4 p.m. for PM, then stay 7 to 8 for all-local 40 by 83.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. When it comes to music, who says Columbus can't be the next Nashville or Austin? The city already generates over $1.3 billion in economic impact from a great music scene, but some say it lacks parts of the industry infrastructure, like major record labels, mid-sized venues, and a dedicated entertainment district that defines top-tier music cities. With artists, insiders, and civic leaders, this week we're stage diving into how Columbus can turn its thriving music ecosystem up to 11. This week's panelists are Bruce Garfield, Executive Director of Music Means Business, Amy Hollihan, Deputy Director of Music Columbus, Natalie Jackson, co-founder of Natalie's Grandview, and Rashad Thomas, CEO of Elevator Music. Our host is Chris DeVille, Managing Editor of Stereo Gum and author of Such Great Heights, The Complete Cultural History of the Indie Rock Explosion. Let's get back to this week's CMC Forum, Amped Up, Columbus Wants Its Music Moment.
We were emailing Natalie, you brought up the subject of public transit as well. Could you share some thoughts on how that relates to the music scene and how perceived shortfalls in public transportation might harm the music scene?
I mean, my personal experience is more of just employees, honestly, more than the music scene. But to me, it's like in my own, if it's affecting my own circle of people, stopping them from doing the things that they would want to do, I imagine that it's more widespread than just my own little focus group. But yeah, I mean, like our line cooks some nights can't close because they have to catch the bus at a certain time. I think for as big of a city as we are, it's an embarrassment, our public transportation. It's just a matter of, there's a large demographic of people that don't drive, and we are not creating pathways for them to get to point A, from point A to point B.
So there's an aspect of that where it's not just good for business or like culture in general, but it's good for like, the culture industry to have people circulating and have people more able to get from point A to point B, yeah. I wanted to talk about, also while we were on the subject of venues, I'm kind of surprised that this is on a way bigger level. We're talking on, kind of more of a grassroots small business level right now, but I see, we do have these large venues like, you have the historic Crew Stadium, you have the Horseshoe, and I feel like we don't get the most out of those either, and I wonder if any of you have insight into that. Like, you have Sonic Temple happening at the old Crew Stadium every year, and I usually see, like, one country show otherwise, and it just feels like there's more potential for, like, signature events and stuff in that's being missed out on. Am I wrong?
Well, Sonic Temple, which is the, was originally Rock on the Range. I'm friends with the guys who run that. And Danny Wimmer, that was his first ever festival. They're always moaning that they get no support of any kind from the city or the county to defray their operating expenses. That in itself dissuades them from wanting to bring another festival here. We also have the Breakaway, which is from a local, Zach Rubin's company, which is local. Country Superfest sells out every single year. So if we had a space, an outdoor space, that could accommodate a festival of the scale of Coachella or Lollapalooza, or even the mid-sized festivals, we would do better and bring more here. Wimmer does Bourbon and Beyond, which has become a huge festival. He claims that the city of Louisville gives him the fairgrounds for basically nothing, and a major reduction on the cost of EMT, fire, police, and electricity. I wish we had more. And in fact, the historic Crew Stadium is a limited size. You know, when you think inside, not counting what seats are blocked off, it's a 20,000 seat venue. And of course, you kind of extend it to the smaller stage outside, but that won't sustain a huge lineup. And their profitability, this is according to them, is nil.
Well, I want to thank everyone. It's CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions, and so we're very soon going to move to questions from our live stream and our in-person audiences, just a few minutes. So if you do have a question, if you're here, make your way over to the microphone. If you're joining us on YouTube, please type your questions into the chat. But before we take audience questions, panelists, I have one more question for all of you. There has been this recurring theme of just valuing the music community, celebrating it, certainly investing in it with money from the places where, from the sources that have money and resources. And so I guess what you want to make a final pitch in terms of like why it makes sense to invest in the music industry, like why should the powers that be throw their support behind something like that as opposed to like building more data centers or, you know, wherever, I don't know what they're choosing between, I'm going to support this or this, but like why should they invest in the music industry?
I can't speak to the corporate aspect of it, but I know individually we can invest in each other. I know individually we can invest in each other as artists. Speaking for myself, I was 13 years old in a service merchandise playing music in the back, and a gentleman heard me, and he was a local producer. He had worked with Rick James, and he invested in me, and he took me into the studio, and I created a career for myself. We have more than just financial investments that we have to make. It's also the time and the effort to, you know, make sure we're, you know, giving our young ones what they need.
Yeah, music is inseparable from urban development, and I think that we need to remember that and prioritize it in conversations that are happening around development of our city, especially as we grow. How can we capture the million plus people we're going to get and bring them in as active participants in this scene? And I think that it's just so important that we continue to have these conversations and recognize that what is happening here already is what we can start from. We don't need to reinvent something. It's organically happening. We just need to elevate it and continue to build strategic partnerships to get the connections across the country to help these musicians succeed.
I think it continues to be one of the most just undervalued, and we need to legitimize the industry. I think there's a lot of similarities between the music industry and the service industry. I think legitimizing an industry means health insurance, living wages, showing up knowing that you're making a guaranteed pay. And I just think it really is one of the few industries left that really hasn't had that moment. So more than even a music moment, it's like, how do we legitimize this industry in a way that artists are treated, yeah, like entrepreneurs, like small businesses?
And if you think about a lot of our corporate headquarters, all of our business partners in the city, you know, remote work has become prevalent and people can choose more and more where they want to live in this country. They're looking for quality of life metrics when they're choosing that. And music and having a vibrant music culture is hugely important factor for many, many people. And I think that that is a huge selling point that you know, if nothing else, you don't you want to be able to go out and have a good time and see some music and know that that's available in your city and being able to just enjoy life? Like, yes.
Right. And think about how music has changed your life and art has changed your life. It's important for non-artists to support art, you know, to support the value of art, because they're looking at you guys and asking, oh, is this important to you? Is it not important to you? Make sure you guys support the artists.
Yes.
Cool. Well, Doug, you want to take over with some questions?
Chris, thank you so much. And thank you so much to today's panelists. Great conversation. Yes, thank you. Thank you. For those of you with us in the live audience today, if you have a question for today's panelists, please do join us here at the microphone. Great opportunity to ask terrific people about today's subject. If you're watching online, please type your question into the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those questions as we can. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in about 60 seconds or less. And what punctuation mark should a question always end with? A question mark. Yes, thank you very much. I'm going to launch us off with this one. Natalie, this is going to be for you. Natalie's Grandview seems to have created a magic formula to attract diverse audiences of all ages that are bound by a love of music. How did you create that formula? How do you nurture it?
We started with just, I think back in the day, I think Charlie, who's my father and business partner, was convinced that live music couldn't sustain itself on its own. Like, you needed food and drink, and that's what was going to sustain the business model. But I think very early on, we had made a decision, like, we don't want to be known as a club that only has songwriters or only has jazz or only has a certain genre. So early on, I mean, his programming was very much like, I want diversity in programming. And that's how it started. And honestly, I think just any time that you have a seated venue, you're going to draw an older demographic of people that just, you know, they're getting to the age where they need a seat. I think the new location has allowed us to cater to everyone. We have a seated venue on one side, and we have the capability of being a standing venue on the other side. And as far as sustaining it, it's sad to admit that it took a global pandemic to put us in a financially stable place that we're in. And it was from a very low interest disaster loan. So maybe that's a model. There's more disaster loans for venues that give you the, you know, cushion that we'd never had before then.
You know, there's often people going around my neighborhood telling me that I can get my roof replaced for free because of, after a storm. So, you know, maybe there's some equivalent we can, like, you know, have a, you know, some pandemic light, you know, maybe there's some scenario that will allow for more of those kinds of loans to be going out.
Good afternoon, and thank you, panelists, for being here. My name is Robert Shenton, board chair for Music Columbus and executive director for the CEO Forum of the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. As a lifelong player and consumer of music, and deeply invested in wanting to see Columbus grow to a level of excellence, there's a dichotomy between sports and music that seems to exist in this city. And so I'll go with collegiate sports, which we all partake in. We love our Buckeyes. $20 million was put in last year to create a national championship team. Name and image likeness there as well. How do we create a name, image, likeness market for the music in Columbus? And we do have a ticket tax. How is that ticket tax actually being employed to really push music forward?
The ticket fee, yes, so goes towards GCAC, which is a supporter of some of our nonprofit music organizations, but we have had some conversations and recognize that our venues are for profit, and so there is a lot of challenge in how that's getting distributed at the moment to support some of our key institutions and venues, and how that can maybe be improved down the line, because music is a huge motivator for how that tax comes in. And so, yeah, I think that's a conversation that needs to be had.
There's something to be said for the fact that Buckeye Sports has decades of, like, build up in terms of, like, institutional support from the entire city, where, like, you know, if we're talking about some of the most popular sports, these are actual, like, celebrities, and part of the reason that they created NIL was so that they could previously they couldn't capitalize on their fame, and now they can. So that, I think that the point being made, though, for the football team is that people invested $20 million in it to make it great, and so maybe it's less NIL, specific to NIL, but like, what is the, what kind of equivalent program can we develop where people can put, I mean, certainly funding the kind of system that Natalie was talking about where artists can have a stipend, that would be a start, I think. All right, sorry to cut you off there.
I'm Barbara Chuko. I'm a volunteer member of the Friends of the Columbus Symphony, and I'm sure you think that's a different kind of music, but they're going through the same concerns you have. They're trying to build a music hall and right on the Seattle River and have other relevant artists around them, which would be wonderful if you guys could cooperate citywide. I think we have so many interesting different types of music, and Columbus is central in the country, so we should capitalize on our centrality. We can be the hub. I guess that's good. So how would you feel about cooperating and improving the national image to make each of you stronger?
I love the idea. I think the incredible diversity that Columbus has as a music landscape is our biggest catch. We have the best of all worlds here, and we also know that we've had the Columbus Symphony do orchestra with rappers before, and have cross genre those things. So I think it's definitely a great idea and a great opportunity.
One of the things that garners the kind of attention you may be talking about is exportation. When you have a huge festival or a unique venue or artists that achieve global or national success, those trails lead back to the city from which they emanated. So I think it's a kind of a combination equation, but we need to have, I have a lawyer in England whose sons fly in for Buckeye games. Do they know anything about Columbus other than that? The answer is no. So again, speaking music specific, the events that basically are our marketing tools, we need more of that, whether it's artists having success and the trail leads back, or if it's another festival, and recognizing what those are and supporting them. I mean, just to go on for a second more, 62% of the people who attend Sonic Temple do not live in the region, and it's not been recognized by anybody as far as the city or the county is concerned, or advertisers. I'd like to know what the statistics are for Country Superfest. It's known around the region and within the genre. So again, I'm just saying you need to have central things, whether it's a venue, a festival, or success of artists, to shine the light on Columbus. And every aspect of the music landscape will benefit from it.
I'd like to add that Music Columbus, we're really unique in having an organization like this. Across other cities, there are some versions of this within city government, but that obviously comes with a lot of limitations. So the fact that we are an independent nonprofit that can work across all of the music community, and we are actively, continually trying to expand that and decrease the silos that just naturally develop sometimes. And so I think, again, reinvesting and working together is of the utmost priority, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think part of it too is if the funding, or if it wasn't the constant struggle of staying above water wasn't existing, we would have more time to form these relationships. I mean, I just feel like, God, I'm like 3 weeks behind on wanting to meet with you. It's like, it's absolutely, the want is there to work with different venues and partner. It's just the time. It's like, how do we feel more supported to open up our time to actually have these meaningful partnerships?
Hi, Travis Awisher, Executive Director for Franklin Arts District. I know all of you guys on stage. I have a million questions or conversation points that we could probably do at another time, but I'm going to do something more fun because we're talking about music and no one's talking about music and the part that gives us joy. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked our table, which is a similar version. What is the last great show you saw in Columbus? Tell me the artist, the venue, and the year. And you're competing against Gabor Klein, whose first concert ever was the Four Tops. So there you go.
Devo at Kimball Live, which was packed with a 40-plus audience, which I'm included in.
I'm going to shout out my colleague, Big Fat Head, Olivia Stefanoff's band, because I feel like they're one of the best bands in Columbus right now, and every time I see them, I leave really, really happy.
Oh, I hate these questions. So I'm going to say something really weird, but probably I had some of my best friends in town for an engagement party, and I had Steph from Honey and Blue, Sid McSweeney, and Angela Pearlie all over to like serenade them. And to me, that was just like, I was like, man, like we have such a great community of people here who all just wanted to come out and lend their voices and energy to people they didn't even know. That's not to say there's not amazing shows happening, but that's one that stands out recently.
Yeah, that's crazy. I honestly can't remember the last concert that was amazing to me that I went to here. But what I will say is Polaris Amphitheater in 1998, Smoking Grooves, was a great time.
If I can answer this one, probably my favorite concert that I saw this year was at Rumba Cafe. It was a band from Philadelphia called Friendship that has an album that I've listened to extensively this year. If you believe that extremely depressing music can be life-affirming and make you happy, then that was an example of that. And local Hello Emerson opened, and that was awesome too.
We have 3 minutes left for a final question.
Thank you. I'll keep it brief. My name's Oliver. I'm the programming manager at Kappa. Quick question. I feel like artists and the art community in general are very good at pushing and pulling like altruistic buttons and levers, things about beautification and culture. How can we as a community improve on our ability to communicate to profit-maximizing organizations and individuals? How can we speak their language, and how can we improve that infrastructure for our community?
Well, if you're talking about maybe like some of our local businesses, yeah. So again, I think it gets back to they have employees that they want to feel like they want to live in our city. And so highlighting that we have this vibrant music community and that they can go out any night of the week and see an amazing show at many of our local venues is incredible. And also that, I'll remind you, our economic impact report says every dollar invested is $1.40, and that's impactful.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we explored how Columbus can harness its creative energy, talent, and business leadership to claim its place as a top-tier music city. We're grateful to this week's panelists: Bruce Garfield with Music Means Business, Amy Holohan with Music Columbus, Natalie Jackson with Natalie's Grandview, and Rashad Thomas with Elevator Music. Our host was Chris DeVille, managing editor of Stereo Gum and author of Such Great Heights, The Complete Cultural History of the Indie Rock Explosion. This forum was sponsored by Music Columbus. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you're ready to keep digging into this week's forum topic, our partners at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading Love, Death, and Photosynthesis by Bella Coe Crompacher. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.